episode of Pomcast is sponsored by Blacker Yarns. Blacker specialise in breed-specific yarns spun in Cornwall using 100% British fibre. You can find out more about Blacker at blackeryarns.co.uk. And welcome to Pomcast, the podcast brought to you by Pom Pom Quarterly. I'm Lydia Gluck, and I am here, as I always am, with the wonderful Sophie Scott. Hi, Sophie.
Hello.
And welcome to this, the December, and therefore festive edition.
We're putting an extra festive sparkle in this episode. You can measure it at the end and tell how different it is.
Yeah.
And how extra festive it is.
Extra festive. Since we're both celebrators of the Christmas variety of festivities, we might be mentioning that. But I can say we're just celebrating this winter time in all its pagan glory.
Yes, I'm celebrating Nitmus as well.
Yeah, that's my main festival, actually.
Many of you may also celebrate it in your own way.
Yeah, I think we can all come together to celebrate Nitmus, and that's what we shall do today in the form of this podcast. So what have we got today, Sophie?
Well, we've got our usual tell and tell. We've got news and reviews. Got a fantastic top secret interviewee.
You're going to love it, guys.
Yep. Extra festive as well. We made sure to up the festive stakes for that. Festivometer was going into overdrive.
Off the charts. And then, of course, we will have our colour of the cast.
Mm-hmm. And can we reveal the colour of the cast now?
Sure.
It's a festive gold.
Gold. What is more festive than gold?
True.
Nothing.
Nothing.
And actually, you could have a better festive time when you have lots of gold.
True. Well, there we go.
So it ties in beautifully. And, you know, tinsel and many Christmas decorations are gold.
Mm-hmm. And chocolate coins.
And fairy lights, sometimes yellowy gold.
Mm.
Chocolate coins are so great. Anyway, and then we'll have top three.
Top three. Christmassy Nitmus top three.
Yes, which will also be top secret.
And we might play you out with a song if you're lucky, you guys.
Because we know there's nothing better than a festive song to get you ready for this festive season.
Rouse the spirits and the rafters. It's all good.
Okay.
So, tell and tell, where we tell you guys and each other what we're up to and knitting at the moment. So, Lydia, what are you knitting?
I just finished a pair of the Curio mitts.
Nice, yes.
From the most recent edition of Pom Pom. And they were super fun to make because they have bubbles. And what is more festive than a bobble?
A bauble.
Exactly.
Yeah, which I can see where you're going with that. Okay.
So that's been one of my main recent knits. How about you?
Well, people who listen to this podcast regularly will know I started pretty much Pomcast 1, the Firewood Shawl, and I was like, I'll find the other colours, so I'm going to knit with this shawl. And that spent, I spent all summer, like, trying different colours. Mm-hmm. I started off with this really amazing, like, cadmium rich saffron yellow. That maybe is a word of warning for people doing three-colour projects. Decide on them before you start knitting, otherwise you'll have a half-finished project for a while, but there's no harm in that. So I've matched the really, like, lovely warm yellow with this duck egg blue.
Mm-hmm.
And then finishing off with the grey, just to kind of tone it down a little bit.
Which yarn are you using for the grey?
The grey is Quince & Co. Lark, and the blue is Simila Grosso. So it's just like all these Aran yarns just having a fun party together in the shawl.
Awesome.
It's a nice way to like try different yarns together, I think. They're kind of nice. And the Malabrigo worsted, which I started the main one off, is like the softest, so it's right around my neck. So it's almost as if I planned it, actually.
Excellent.
And also, just for a little mini winter project, I've started some little wrist warmers, and they're called the cutest little name, which is Toast and Jam, and they're by Emily Foden of Viola fame.
Mm-hmm.
And she designed them with the John Arbin Viola, so there's a big link in there, there's a general Viola theme.
Mm-hmm.
They're lovely, like Merino DK, and Toasty Warm, pun intended, as she says in the little description. They've got really nice twisted rib. They're quite long, which I think is what you need in a hand warmer, because keep your wrists and your general length of arm warm.
Mm-hmm.
They've got like a cute little garter stitch palm, so I think look those up if you need to keep toasty and toast-themed.
As always.
Yeah.
And sort of in addition to the Curio mitts, I'm mainly doing sort of project plans, because contrary to the statement I often make, which is that I don't knit Christmas presents because I am the Grinch, My heart was melted by a group of tiny people holding hands on Christmas Day.
Did it grow three sizes?
It did. My heart did. And I have decided to make my brother a hat. Because the other day he put a hat on. It looked nice. I've never really seen a bit of hat before.
And that your hair and the music rose and your heart swelled. You saw the beauty of my own brother wearing a hat.
But it's something... not a hat that I made, so bad. So I need to fix that.
That was nearly dissolved your grinchiness, and then you kind of came back like, I will make all the hats.
People may only wear hats if I have made them. Setting myself quite a big task there.
Yeah, wow.
So watch this space, guys, because I'm sure I'll be discussing said hat in future editions of this podcast.
Excellent. So moving on to news. Well, we recently had the pom-pom party.
Pom-pom Christmas party.
Well, the pom-pom party is the best.
And it was lots of fun.
Yes. There was lots of lovely music. We had a band called Theobard.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what the guy he said to remember. It was like, Theo likes something and Bard likes Shakespeare.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure what the Theo bit was, though. I think he obviously needs a more well-known Theo reference.
Yes, but it was good because I remember the Bard bit and then that made me think of Theo. So, okay, he's got a... There's a marketing plan there somewhere.
I think so. And both he and the nice young man who was playing bass for him both wore very fetching knitted items.
Was this planned?
It was.
Okay, good, because they, you know... They had to somehow get an entry into a knitting party.
Yeah.
And get the good jumpers out.
So they were delightful. And we also had our mini pop-up market,
mm-hmm.
which featured all sorts of exciting people. We had Pearl Alpaca. We had Lioness Arts. We had Kettle Yarn Co. We had Yellow Bear Wears. And we had plant-dyed wool, or probably yarn more specifically, from Elizabeth Beverly. All of which were wonderful. And... Yeah, it was great. There were delicious cocktails.
Yes. I actually got a hot toddy because I came in and I was like, oh, can I just get a cup of tea? And the woman was like, oh, no, do you want a hot toddy? And I was like, yes, that's the best of every world.
Win!
Yeah, that was quite good. Yeah, it was just a lovely festive environment. Everyone was sort of sat around knitting. There was cheese boards, which was lovely.
And we had wonderful raffle prizes. We had door prizes donated by all sorts of fantastic people. From Miller Mia, we had tickets for Unravel, tickets for Edinburgh Yarn Festival, just all manner of super good prizes. I was sad I couldn't win any of them, but
yeah,
a bit of conflict of interest.
I kept, with the table I was sat at, we kept practicing our, like, you know, congratulatory faces. Every time someone would win, we'd kind of look at each other and be like, oh, of course, and then we'd do that little kind of Oscar clap of like, oh, well done, they deserved it. So that's how we passed the time while we didn't win anything.
It's a shame.
But really, if I had won anything, I'd have to be like, oh no, draw it again. Because people would be like, it's fixed.
Although my mum did win a prize.
Oh, well, it was fixed then, guys, yeah. Come on.
No.
It wasn't fixed, please.
So we had a fabulous time, and we really hope everyone else there did. It seemed like everyone was having a good time.
Yeah, it was a lovely atmosphere. Lots of fairy lights, which I think always makes a party. Or any
giant wreaths.
Yes.
Christmas
and
wreaths.
I hope people noticed, but the actual signs to the pom-pom party had actual pom-poms on the hat.
Yes.
Which, yeah, okay, was the winner for me. You know, set the whole tone of the party. Attention to detail, exactly.
And there were little fake topiaries?
Topiaries.
There were little fake topiaries outside the front doors, and we put sort of strings of baubles and pom-poms around those, which I thought was a nice touch.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there you go. Decoration ideas for everyone.
Exactly. And yeah, so thanks again to everyone who came down, and we will, of course, keep you up to date with any other pom-pom-related events.
Fantastic. Other dates for your diaries in the new year. In February, we've got Unravel, the lovely festival in Farnham, just outside London.
Yeah, so that's one to watch. We'll definitely be there. And also, this year, for the first time, we're going to be at the Edinburgh Yarn Festival in March.
Fantastic.
Which I'm particularly excited about. I've never been to Edinburgh. I've been to Glasgow many, many, many times. Never quite made it the 1 hour to Edinburgh.
There we go. New resolutions.
Something for everyone. Yeah, and we'll obviously keep you up to date with other events that will be coming up throughout the year.
Very exciting.
Indeed.
So, reviews.
Reviews. So what's on the cards for today?
Well, we have a little mention of the lovely new book by Carrie Bostick Hodge, her Anthology 1, which is a collection of her patterns, an anthology, if you will, as the title would suggest, from her sort of designs that she's done with Quince & Co. So this collection of variations upon a theme, so there's her stitch patterns, which sort of feature on shawls and cardigans and mm-hmm. jumpers. There's Camilla, Sabella, Imogen and Beatrice. So these are her sort of set stitch patterns that mm-hmm. she's kind of got. They're really beautiful. It's a really kind of quite feminine and delicate design collection, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think the one I'm looking at right now, the Beatrice ones, that one though is quite kind of geometric, I would say, but in a sort of lovely wave-like way.
Nice
rhythm to it.
Yeah. I mean, there's the kind of, she does a lot of work with Quince, they kind of have quite that kind of classic contemporary feel. They're quite kind of, I'm going to say airy, the photographs, but not in a kind of drifty way.
But as in there's a feeling of light and air.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. And I do like her designs because they're quite contemporary in that way. But like I said, they've got that kind of feminine with the, you know, a lot of lacy patterns.
Yeah.
But it's not too overly romantic, fussy lace. You kind of get quite a kind of clean look to her designs.
Yeah, and then with the Quince & Co yarn, it's kind of, they're a good match, aren't they? Because lovely kind of modern colours. The yarn is very easy to work with.
Mm, yeah.
It has great stitch definition, but it's very kind of soft. So it does the things that you want wool to do. Without doing scratchy things, I would say.
yeah, Quince and Co yarns are definitely, stitch definition is one of the things I return to them for because it does deliver on that beautifully.
Yeah.
And it's great for showing up these patterns
exactly,
in this design.
Where the focus is, in many ways, on the stitch patterns.
Indeed.
And the other thing I wanted to mention was that Quince and Co keep coming out with awesome new colours.
Hey, yeah.
Anyway, that's a little segue or sort of side thing. I think one of my favourites is the Camilla shawl.
Ah, why would that be?
I think it's because I'm a sucker for that kind of scalloped edge
mm-hmm.
on things.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been quite a few shawls with scalloped edges, and I pretty much like all of them. I've made the Charm shawl by Juju Vale. And what's the Isolde Teague one?
Marin,
that one's beautiful. I haven't made it, but, you know.
Interesting little, like, cross cables and then, yeah.
Exactly.
From each of those little cables comes a big scallop, which is really pretty.
Yeah, and I think the Camilla shawl has, it has a similarly kind of scalloped edge, although obviously very different kind of construction. And that's mainly why I like that one.
Yeah, I think my favourite would have to be the Sabella pullover, which has a very delicate yoked open design, but then just like a really good classic cardi shape.
Yeah, and that one actually has been on my to make list for a long, long time.
Lovely.
And one day when I have all the time in the world, I will make it. And I also really, really like the stitch pattern that she's used in the Beatrice stitch pattern.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that I was referring to that's quite kind of geometric and
right. To
me is kind of reminiscent of waves, but it's also got that kind of nice openness to it.
Mm-hmm.
But the bits that aren't open are very kind of chunky.
Yeah.
It's got a nice kind of contrast in that way. And I really like the Beatrice cowl and the garter stitch bits between the kind of interesting stitch, you probably know by now, I quite like garter stitch.
It's good. I feel like the overall feel of the book is quite spring-like. So
yes.
Although it's got lovely cardigans and jumpers, which will keep you warm, just the whole kind of feel of it is quite,
springy.
Springy.
And in a way, should probably start making spring things now, because by the time I'll be done with them, it might be spring.
So there you go. Have a look at that if you like all those things we've hinted about, sort of spring, gorgeous stitch patterns, excellent yarns. You'll probably love this book.
Yeah, and, you know, Carrie Bostick Hodge is one of the great Ravelry designers, I would say. And so, you know, working with her patterns is a dream.
So we gave Cerulea's book 2 thumbs up. So this is maybe a gold star and an excellent.
A smiley face.
Yeah, and a smiley face.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. This is our new ranking system in books. So, yeah, that was Carrie Bostick Hodge Anthology 1. So check it out.
Check it out.
So on to our yarn review with our lovely sponsor, Blacker Yarns. Which yarn of theirs are we reviewing today?
The Blacker Swan Luxury DK. It's a Falkland Merino.
Mm, and what was this yarn like to knit with then?
It's very soft. It's on the thick side for DK. They do it in other weights, but I've just worked with the DK.
Mm.
It's sort of got lovely stitch definition and I enjoyed it very much.
Very good. So I know Blacker, as we've said before, they produce very breed-specific yarns.
Mm-hmm.
What's special about this one?
This one, well, it's from the Falkland Islands, from a very small farm. And there are horses related to the farm. They herd the sheep on horseback,
aww,
which is adorable. Yeah, and they're very specific about which fleeces they send on to Blacker to be processed, and the merino is of very high quality and is cruelty-free, which is very important.
Always good. Lovely. And they have horses to be friends with, so that's nice.
Well, exactly. Sheep who are friends with horses.
They're always going to be happy, yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. And so what's the colour range like?
It's, well, it's brilliant. It's one of the best, it's sort of my favourite colour range at the moment. I'm lucky enough to have a shade card of theirs.
Oh, lovely.
And they have all my favourite colours. They have a very nice sort of minty green. They have a lovely kind of mustard yellow, a nice range of purples, which is my new favourite. And it's the yarn that was used in for the sorrel hat from the most recent issue of Pom Pom magazine.
Fantastic. So check it out.
And so after that review, we are going to move on to our interview with our top secret guest, who is...
Megan Fernandez,
who is the co-creator and co-editor of Pom Pom. So finally, you will hear her voice in all its glory all the way from Austin, Texas.
It is a Skype interview, so our apologies for some crackle and
pop.
It's extra fun festivity, that. Today we're joined by Megan Fernandez, co-editor of and creator of Pom Pom Quarterly, and also a wonderful designer, teacher, knitter, and friend. Hello, Megan.
Hello.
Hi.
How's the weather in Texas today?
Well, the weather is not what it usually is in Texas today. It is kind of overcast, and it's a little bit chilly, but it's not really cold. Say that. Definitely not compared to London.
Yeah, it is quite chilly here today.
And how's the sun factor? Because I feel like there's been a lot of sunshine in London, I've been noticing recently.
Yeah, it's pretty crisp today.
Yeah, no, it's been a very pleasant day, I would say. It's a very nice weekend. Fresh.
So, Megan, of course, you were living in the UK for about 10 years, and now you've relocated.
I have.
I was going to ask you about sort of the different trends in knitwear, because obviously you've studied them within the UK. Can you say there's like a difference in knitwear or like styles of knitting, or are we indeed just really all the same with our knitting?
There's less of a need for like chunky knitwear here, for sure. So you might not need, like, I have a really big like mohair wool blend sweater, which actually there was a few days a couple of weeks ago that I had to drag it out, but basically I didn't really need to wear a coat if I had the big sweater on. So there's a need for sweaters and things, but maybe not in combination with a coat, and maybe not like a huge scarf or anything. But that doesn't mean that people don't like to knit those things here. So I think knitters sort of do like the sort of wishful knitting kind of stuff. But yeah, probably slightly finer yarns here in Texas, at least. But where I'm from in Washington, D.C., there's definitely, you know, the same kind of stuff going on with thicker stuff and color work and all that good stuff.
Cool. And we already know the background to your... sort of
knit journey.
Yeah, knit journey from knitter to designer and magazine creator / editor. But when did you learn to knit and how?
Oh, I learned to knit from my boyfriend's mother when I was about 16. And she was and is very, very super cool. And for my birthday, she bought me enough yarn to knit a sweater, because she knew that I wanted to do this. She didn't just like force it on me. She knew that I wanted to learn how to knit. And then she, like, I used to hang around their house all the time. So she was just like kind of always there showing me what to do and then helping me out when I needed it. And it was kind of the nicest way I can imagine having learned to knit.
Do you still have the jumper?
I have remnants of it. I eventually use the yarn to like make different things. For some reason I don't think I finished like the last sleeve on the sweater, and then I went to college and brought it with me, and then I must have just like sort of divided it up into other projects, but I definitely have stuff that's made from that same yarn.
That's a nice memory, and it's kind of evolved into your new developments of knitting now.
Yeah, I mean, I have that. She gave me a really nice, I think it was actually hers, but a knitting bag. So it's kind of vintage, and I still have that. It's like a big kind of quilted thing that I really love. And yeah, we've been in touch recently because I sent her a bunch of magazines to tell her what I was up to, and that was all, you know, down to her. And it was really nice to hear back from her about that.
That's nice. But you're not in touch with the boyfriend anymore.
Well, you know, there's Facebook and all that kind of stuff, but but he lives in a faraway place, so, you know, there's no chance for us to see each other.
How did you get into designing, and can you remember the first thing you designed?
Oh, yeah. I was kind of in between things. Like, I'd finished my master's, and I had kind of moved on from a job, and so I was in between things, and then, like, Ravelry happened, and so I was, like, on the internet all the time and, like, knitting all the time because I didn't have much else going on while I was buying and yeah, I think I just started playing around with stuff, and I think it was either one of those like headband ear warmer things or an Oyster card cover that I designed.
Both necessary in London.
Yeah, essentials, yeah.
Yeah, London essentials. And I had like a blog at the time, and so yeah, I was just kind of like playing around, but yeah, I enjoyed it a lot.
Wonderful. And you're now actually due to start teaching some classes in the new year. Can you tell us a little bit more about them?
Yeah, well, actually, Lydia's coming to visit in like a couple of days, and next weekend we're teaching at Hill Country Weavers, which is a great shop here in Austin. And then next year I'm going to be teaching at a retreat that Hill Country Weavers is putting on. And it's like out in the wilderness. Well, not really the wilderness. It's like, you know, in the countryside, or what you'd call
there's
the hill
trees,
country.
You know,
there are trees and a lake. Yeah. You call it the hill country here. And, yeah, I'm going to be teaching like a like fancy raglans class and blocking, and then like a fun like pom-poms and tassels and embellishments kind of class. And I'm super, super excited because Cerulea, who is your guest on the last podcast.
Mm-hmm. And that's been good.
yes, I have. and like my hero, Nora Gaughan, are the other teachers. So I'm like, yeah, really excited and really nervous at the same time about that one.
Wow, I think I'd get super starstruck meeting Nora.
Yeah. Lydia and I just both kind of did a little to each other, like, secretly.
But, you know, there's been, like, emails about the retreat and stuff, and then, like, Nora Gaughan will do a reply all, and I'm like, oh, like, hand to my forehead, like Scarlet from, you know, Gone with the Wind.
Yeah,
yeah, just swooning.
Oh, wonderful. That sounds fun. Well, you'll be excellent. I'm sure you have. It sounds really fun.
The hill country sounds so romantic.
Yeah, well, very Gone with the Wind, you know.
Yes, it's very pretty. It's very pretty. Yeah, Texas is in all sort of desert and tumbleweeds, as you might expect. There's like actually a lot of, you know, like trees and hills and that kind of thing as well. So that's nice.
I can't believe the movies have lied to me.
Yeah.
I feel so wronged.
Texas is like 5 times the size of Britain or something like that. So there's a lot of variety, actually. So it's good.
Yeah, there's a lot of scope for different landscapes within a piece of land that size, I guess.
Yeah.
So with your sort of approach to designing knitwear, do you feel that's kind of changed now, moving from kind of like a city life to somewhere much larger, 5 times as large as you just said? Or do you
I'm not sure if that's a cool fact, but yeah.
Sure, well, we'll say it is for now. You're the authority on these things now. Or do you get your inspiration from sort of different kind of cultural sources?
Well, there's a nice sort of like Tex-Mex vibe here, which, you know, like there's a lovely sort of like folk arts or crafts kind of thing that, you know, comes from Mexico and that kind of thing. Not so much knitting necessarily, but the colors and patterns and things like that are interesting. So that's pretty inspiring. But I think I'm definitely going to be much more into plant fibers. Mm-hmm. Well, I already am much more into plant fibers now, just because I've spent a summer here now. And even, well, actually with the air conditioning on, you can pretty much get away get away knitting with anything you want. But I think in terms of like stuff that you can wear practically, linen and cotton and things like that, which a lot of times I know knitters are kind of like really put off by because they don't have the same like kind of elasticity and things like that as animal fibers. But there's some really beautiful things that come from plants these days. Artisan linen, which is beautiful and hand dyed, and then the habu cotton that we used last summer in Pom Pom, which is you know, it's like almost like silk, and silk's another one that would be really great to work with as well. But here in Texas, actually, there's a big mohair thing that happens, and you might know that like Quince & Co., their Piper uses Texas mohair and stuff like that. So yeah, it's been fun getting to know different stuff that I can wear here and different stuff that's local to here. So yeah, it's been really interesting.
Cool. And do you have any other tips for hot place knits? Any particular patterns or
any hot knits, you know?
I wore my water lily a lot here. I made one in some linen, which was beautiful linen. It's called like Dunlin DK. It's a Danish something or other, but I wore that a lot this summer. So anything that's like not too fitted, I think, first of all. And then lacy stuff is good. And, you know, stuff that's kind of, yeah, loosey stuff, which is the kind of thing that I like to wear anyway. So it works out for me.
Perfect.
And handily, you design water lily. So, of course, it's the perfect pattern that you want to wear and knit. So.
But yeah, I'm trying to think of what else did I wear this summer? I wasn't really prepared for this summer because after 10 years of living in the UK, I didn't really have that many, like, proper Texas summer clothes. So it was sort of like my wardrobe is still a work in progress here. But I think by next summer I'll be prepared.
Fantastic.
Do you find you're less interested in the color gray now that you're not surrounded by it all the time?
I can't say that I was super interested in the color gray to begin with. I mean, I like gray. But I've always liked like really bright colors anyway. And also, I'm not sure that I suit gray, or that gray suits me, or that we suit each other that well. So, but I've been into black more for some reason.
Ooh.
And I don't know if that's because I'm growing up, but...
I actually had a conversation about this with my sister because neither of us used to ever wear black, and quite frequently we both end up wearing all black at the moment. And I was like, "Is this because I've become lazier with my clothes, or am I a grown up now? I don't know."
No, it's black is like sophisticated, you know. I like it. So and you know, I've reached a milestone in my life recently in terms of my age, and I don't know. For some reason, black is appealing these days, or like a kind of midnight blue I'm feeling as well.
You're not mourning for the loss of the UK that you've moved away from.
A little bit. Actually, probably black would be a lot more appropriate in the UK, you know, just in terms of, or in London at least, you know, in terms of that sort of like big city kind of vibe. But
not showing up dirt, that kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Sitting on the tube, hey, I'm quite clean still.
There's a little, visitors to London tip. Actually, when I first moved to London, the university that I came over with, like, gave us, like, all kinds of, like, sort of cultural information and tips for, like, being a student in London and stuff like that. And I remember that in the sort of, like, guide notes or whatever, it did say that having darker clothes would make it so that you had to do your laundry less. And also that people in Europe didn't have as much variety in their clothing as Americans do.
Oh, really?
Which I'm not sure if that's actually true or not, but like, I don't know, it said something about like, you know, like in America you wouldn't want to like show up in the same outfit too close together or something like that, but in Europe it's totally fine. I don't know where they got this information from.
No, the thing is, I found something different. Like an American person, you know, an American who I went to university with said that like the stuff British people wore was like so eccentric, and you'd never get away with wearing that in America. So,
but then we'll wear the same outfit 5 days in a row.
Well, so. Yeah.
But I think that's true, Sophie. I think that's true because I'm actually, having not lived here for 10 years, I'm having like that reverse thing where when I first came to the UK, there was always like something that like, I would always know where to buy it in America, you know, like, you know, oh, I could get that at Target, but I have no idea where to get it in the UK. And now I'm having that in the opposite direction and I don't know where to get my clothes. So Americans, if you're listening, you can let me know where to go shopping because I've just been ordering things from the UK.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but...
Have you been ordering things from ASOS?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Excellent.
Okay, so we have one of our classic questions from the podcast, which I'm actually really intrigued to know the answer to. So what's your spirit?
I know what the question's going to be.
Excellent. Well, you will be planned and ready for this question then. So what's your spirit animal?
Actually, I have no... I've thought about this every time I hear you guys talk about it. And I have no idea. I have thought about it.
Oh.
But I really have no idea. No, but maybe you guys can suggest one for me so that I can...
Well, maybe you could be a cat because you commune with your cats.
I do. And you know what? Now that the American outpost of Pom Pom is now based in my home, I spend a lot of time with my cats. And, you know, they're often the only people I talk to face-to-face during a work day. So, yeah, I can go with that. Yep.
What do you reckon, Sophie?
Yeah, I'd say, well, you know, Megan has a sleek, shiny coat, like a cat.
Yes. Yeah.
Very, okay. You know, very friendly.
Great balance.
Great balance, yeah.
So our next question is, if you're stuck on a desert island and you can only have one yarn to knit with, what would the yarn be?
Yeah, it would definitely have to be the Uncommon Thread and probably the BFL DK because C's colors are just like so amazing and they glow and I have to choose which one's my favorite every time I see a batch of it, you know, like it changes all the time which color is my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I think I could pretty much just knit with that forever.
Fair enough. And that particular yarn would be probably quite suitable for all sorts of climates, so
it would, yeah.
Whichever desert island you end up on, never really sure what kind of desert island it is, but
I'm sort of hoping that it's one where I only need to wear sweaters at night.
Yes, that's fair enough. What kind of desert island would it be otherwise? It'd be really rubbish. Yeah.
So one of the features of our podcast, we're talking about festive knits. Do you have any favorite like festive patterns or anything you've knit for the Christmas period?
I was gonna say I haven't done any Christmas knitting yet, but I which is actually true because I've done some Christmas crocheting.
Mm-hmm.
That is also acceptable.
I'm glad. I made the falling snow mitts for my friend Mary, which I'm going to put in the post to London tomorrow. Or in fact, I could send them with Lydia back to London when she goes back.
I am the messenger.
Yeah.
But I might just put them in the post tomorrow. But yeah, I made some falling snow mitts from the current issue of Pom Pom by Judith Brand.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very, very pretty. Yeah, I mixed a, cause they take a DK, but I mixed a Madeleine Tosh sock with a kind of fuzzy lace weight, so they kind of have that like nice what do you call it, sheen, but also a little bit of a halo.
Lovely.
And so they're kind of, yeah, I'm going to be sad to send them away, but Mary is a very deserving recipient of them. So that's the only thing I've made so far, because I've been doing a lot of pom-pom related knitting in preparation for our photo shoot, which is like, or yeah, next week. Oh my God. I do have plans, and I can say all these things because I'm pretty sure that the friends that I'm making these things for are not into knitting enough to be listening to the podcast.
But, top secret. Yeah.
Yeah. For my best friend, I'm planning on making some Overbury mitts from the very first issue of Pom Pom by Luck. Yeah, because when it first came out, she was like, oh my God, these are the mittens I've been looking for my whole life. And now it's been like 2.5 years or something like that. So I should probably make them for. And hopefully she still has that gap to be filled in her life that I can fill with mittens.
Fantastic.
But yeah, I haven't done a lot of Christmas knitting in my life overall, which is sounds terrible of me.
But you tend not to be a gift-giving knitter then.
I guess not. I guess I know that I am going to usually be the most appreciative recipient of my own knitting.
I mean, that's probably true.
Yeah.
If that doesn't sound. But I do like knitting for like friends or family that have small children, which is usually a hit. So that doesn't always happen at Christmas. But my nieces are in Australia. And so, of course, Christmas falls during their summer. So knitting for them just for Christmas, like, doesn't make any sense, really. So, but, you know, I have a lot of baby-producing friends now. So hopefully get a few of those in in the near future.
Oh, lovely. So we're nearly at the end of the interview, and indeed nearly at the end of the year. Do you have any exciting knitting-based plans for 2015, or any plans otherwise?
Oh, well, now that I'm over here in the Western Hemisphere, I'm hoping to explore sort of knitting traditions over here a little bit more. So I'd love to, like, you know, I having just moved over here, I feel like I'm on holiday or vacation, like, all the time because everything's really new. But I'd love to, like, get to Peru or something like that and have, like, knitting exploratory kind of adventure. But other than that, yeah, the plant-based yarn experimenting is high up on my list of things. And yeah, just enjoying being over here in the new world.
You've just discovered it. It's great. Well, that sounds lovely. Well, all the best for a very Merry Christmas.
Yes, and
Merry Christmas.
And I'll be seeing you very soon, which is exciting. Yay! And we hope to have you on the podcast more in the future.
USA.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
Cool. All right, bye, Megan.
Bye, thank you.
Bye.
Moving on to one of our newer segments, which we've now named Ravelry Realness. There's been no opposition to this name, so
we're sticking with it.
Yep. So the Ravelry Realness we're investigating today is Christmas-themed jumpers.
How festive of us!
I know! We promised it for you guys, and we're delivering.
Mm-hmm. So, Sophie, tell me what we've got.
So definitely we'd have to mention Susan Crawford's The Perfect Christmas Jumper. As the name suggests, it's pretty damn perfect.
And it's quite a grandiose claim, but it's, you know,
we're happy to, yeah, support that.
Exactly, yes. It's basically true. It's the perfect Christmas jumper.
It's very nice. It's got a bit of fur on. It's got reindeers on it. It's red and white. Little cute puff sleeves.
I know, I love the little puff sleeves. They're lovely.
Susan Crawford is, of course, famous for her vintage stylings. Mm-hmm. As Stitch in Time, her two anthologies. And now she does her own wonderful vintage style wools, like mm-hmm. Fenella and...
Yes. Exelana.
Exelana, indeed. It is.
In collaboration with John Arbon, I believe.
Excelente. Is in no way to do with that. So beautiful. That's a really nice one. What else would you recommend from Ravelry for a top Christmas jumper?
I would say the Kate Davies jumper, mm-hmm. Borealis.
That's pretty. I think one of the good things about that, because it's got a great snowflake design, it's not too Christmassy as a Christmas jumper that you could wear it throughout the colder winter period.
It's true you could, and you know, because you could do it in slightly less Christmassy colors.
Sure. I mean, she's
like yellow and gray.
Yeah, she's got like hers in like a deep jade, like much like a pine tree green with a white, and it's quite geometric because it's like it almost splits like halfway across your chest with quite a bold snowflake design with a two-tone. So
quite modern. Yes, I would say, and like you say, it's a good one because it doesn't scream Christmassy jumper, but it does feel like you're getting into the spirit.
A whisper of Christmas.
Yeah. A glimpse through a snowy window pane.
A frosted breath.
Santa's step outside as you wait. Anyway, what else we got?
Definitely. Tin Can Knits, also a snow-themed one. Ooh. Snowflake. Again, as the wisp of Christmas within that, as its sort of main is the kind of plain jumper, mm-hmm. but then along the top's a very pretty snowflake lace.
Yes. Yeah, and it's nice to have a bit of lace there. That's quite avant-garde in the Christmas jumper world, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, because when it gets to any colder weather, I'm just basically wool from head to toe, so a wisp of lace at the shoulders is, oh dear, I'm kind of chilling.
That's when you've had too many glasses of port on Christmas Day and feel a bit warm.
There we go.
Perfect environment for it. So yeah, that's the Ravelry realness.
Mm, there's definitely, if you're feeling a loose end, definitely look at all the Intarsia jumpers that are available on Ravelry. Just put in Christmas jumper and there are thousands and thousands of jumpers that...
I mean, I'm not sure if they're whole jumper patterns or if a lot of them are just charts for exciting Christmas items, like polar bears, snowmen, reindeers.
Well, you know what's on a Christmas jumper, guys, you know.
But you could make a reindeer Christmas jumper and put a red pom-pom for the nose.
Hey, there is the class... I think Fair Isle always makes me feel quite Christmassy, so...
It's true, I'm kind of... It's almost like when I think of Christmas knitwear, I just think of everything Scandinavian.
Definitely have to give a shout out to the Fornicating Deer chart by Anne Rutten. Oh my god, her surname is Rutten.
I know, I just
realised.
Was she inspired by her own surname, do you think?
That's pretty impressive, but yes. It's a free chart, and it would be, as the name suggests, a very funny Fair Isle pattern. I think it'd be quite good in sort of a whole innocent jumper, just to put that.
Just add a few Fornicating Deer.
Yeah.
Mm, could be a nice motif on a sock.
Yep, people have used it on mittens. Yeah, socks. There's a little note on her Ravelry page where it says to the unsuspecting spectator, it might look like there are two males in this chart. I made it having two reindeers in mind, so who knows what gender our frolicking friends are. That's a nice little message for just general acceptance of all deer and people.
Yes. And what is more festive than acceptance?
What is more festive than frolicking? All right, I think we need to reindeer this in now.
And move swiftly on. Okay. Colour of the cast, which, as we mentioned, is that most festive of colours. Gold.
The suspense was killing me. So, gold. Always believe in your soul.
That is such a good message, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you feel indestructible?
Always.
Good. Well, let's move on. So, some factoids with gold. Gold as the colour and gold as the element. A, you.
Mm-hmm.
Also, that's an element joke. Cause...
Oh, it is! Well done. Hey, you know your chemistry things.
Mm-hmm.
Well done. So, all right, we have at number one of, well, not really number one, the first gold fact is broadly sort of, yeah, thread themed.
So, gold is so pliable that it can be made into sewing thread. So an ounce of gold can be stretched over 50 miles.
That is far.
So it's really ductile, so you can just keep stretching and stretching.
Amazing.
So a lot of ornate tapestries and sewing mm-hmm. in the past is actually gold thread.
Which is, I always just assumed that it was pretend gold, but it's not. Well done, people, for stretching gold out and making it into thread. That's impressive. So the next fact I have is that in around 1200 BC, the Egyptians used unshorn sheepskin to mine for gold dust from the sands of the Black Sea.
Wow.
This practice is most likely the inspiration for the Golden Fleece. Mm. I wonder how that works.
So it's going to catch all the little bits in the sea as they scoop it through like a sieve, but like it's going to let all the water through and catch all those tiny little bits of dust.
There's nothing sheepskin can't do.
True.
Like a donut. And I would like to do the next fact because it involves my name.
Okay.
And I'm proud of it. So... in 560 BC, this is, you know, the sands of time, mm-hmm. the gold dust sands of time.
They've
moving back to
trickled
through them.
Back.
So in 560 BC, the Lydians.
Wow.
Yeah. Introduced the first gold coin. How's that for a name fact? My name's so cool. Okay. Which was actually a naturally occurring amalgam of gold and silver called electrum, which is another really cool word. Herodotus criticizes the materialism of the Lydians, who also were the first to open permanent retail shops. When the Lydians were captured by the Persians in 546 BC, the use of gold coins began to spread. I feel like that's quite a nice legacy for my people. Coins, materialism. I continue that to this day.
And then they opened a magazine.
And then they decided to start a magazine. That lucrative thing. We've already talked about AU, but here's another fun fact.
So during the 14th century, drinking molten gold and crushed emeralds was used as a treatment for the bubonic plague.
Delightful.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
Well, you know, that's how they managed to get rid of the bubonic plague, wasn't it? That's why it's not around anymore.
No.
And let's see. We've also got... well, this is another fun fact that...
They're all fun.
That's true. They are all fun. May feel slightly familiar to any of you who've seen Game of Thrones, which seems like it's over the top, but based on this fact, actually... quite restrained in its depiction of peoples and what they are willing to do to each other. Okay, in 1599, a Spanish governor in Ecuador taxed the Jivaro tribe so excessively that they executed him by pouring molten gold down his throat. Not a fun way to go, but no plague, because it would definitely have got ridden.
Yeah, if he had any plague, flush that right out.
That's probably why they did it like that.
True.
You know, like, you're bringing disease over here, we need to get rid of you and your plague. And on that... positive and festive note, we have our final fact of today.
So, you've all heard about gold being measured in carats.
Mm-hmm. So this term, as in those orange things we eat?
Hey, no. Oh. Actually comes from the term carat with one R and an A instead of an O. Mm. It comes from carob, which was a seed, which was used for standard for weighing small quantities in the Middle East.
Huh.
So this was a, carrots were a fruit from a carob tree. Every single pod weighs 1/5 of a gram.
That's
and
amazing.
Pure gold is, which would be the weight of 24 carrots, is so soft it can be moulded by hand.
Wowee. It would be like Play-Doh.
We didn't mention about the edible gold.
Which is a thing.
Yeah. So if you have Goldschlager over the festive period, which men have... like little gold flakes in it. It's edible.
Yeah,
so.
It's actual gold, and you can eat it, and it's fine.
I heard, well, there was an urban myth with this, so apparently it was meant to be because it can cut your throat as it goes down, and that lets the alcohol into your bloodstream quicker.
Okay.
But, I mean, I heard this, but it's not true, because gold is so malleable, it's not even going to do anything, it's just so kind of soft.
It's very, very soft, isn't it? Yeah.
So don't worry about that, guys, and drink responsibly.
Always. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, after that, tip-top factoid fest, we have our tip top three.
Yes. So, in a Christmassy style,
we're
going to talk about Christmas crackers.
Whoa. Are they fun biscuits you eat at Christmas?
Hey, no. They're the cardboard tubes of excitement that you get on your dinner table, and sometimes people put them on the tree.
They do, it's true.
Do you know where they actually... a Christmas cracker was invented, how it was invented.
No.
So there was a Victorian gentleman who was sat on the fire and a little spark. And there's the spark.
Yeah.
And it came out the fire, a little crack. And he's like, well, that's fun. And he set him on an idea of recreating this. So he harnessed it in the little paper cracking thing that you get in the middle of the tube. That's what the catalyst for the invention was.
Well, I never.
To have little treats inside.
Because it is really disappointing when it doesn't make the crack noise.
Sure, yeah.
That's the worst Christmas ever. Okay, so in the vein of crackers, we have our top three
Christmas cracker gifts.
So that's the fun things you get inside the cracker, not the hat, because that always comes, although that is awesome.
I was quite tempted to say that was my favourite things, because you get the hat and it never really quite fits, and that's quite enjoyable.
It always looks funny on everyone.
And then you make the grumpy people wear the hat, and then they're like, I don't want to wear the hat, and then they
my head's so small that they always fall down and become a sort of paper necklace.
My head's so big that they just...
they perch on top.
But yeah, I think paper hats are great.
Me too, and you get a joke if you're lucky as well, but those don't count because they're not... well, because they come with all crackers.
Yeah.
All right, so if you tell me what your top three cracker surprise gifts are.
So, well, it's more of a memory, my first third one. My first third? I used to work in a very strange pub/bar/hotel/ Hell Hole, which was one of my first jobs, and they used to do big, like, company events in one of the big suites, and they were a horrible place. They were always cutting corners, not only with their staff's wages, but with the general ambiance and food and Christmas crackers.
Mm-hmm.
And the tables would be littered at the end with all the gifts that nobody wanted because they were all really weird. And one of them was a little Y-shaped piece of plastic, mm-hmm. which was sort of curved up at the ends. And if for some reason it had a little flower, like, etched into the you know, the stick of the Y. And they came in all these different colours. And it was always the most bizarre thing for people to win. And I remember serving drinks and someone sort of said to their friend, like, what is this? As they held it up. And they were like, oh, I can tell you. It's a green one of these and had one of the matching ones. And we think, I think what the general consensus was, it was some sort of catapult thing that you put a mini elastic band on.
But they didn't give you the elastic band?
No, no. So that's kind of like a memory of a bad place, but it's kind of funny because I ended up having a lot of them and just had them around in drawers for various things. Still, like, no real use, but that was a...
Number three.
Yeah, that was a fun time.
It was a way of making a non-fun thing fun.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And also knowing where the security cameras were in the restaurants so I could eat all the mini packets of cornflakes.
Oh, yum.
Yeah, just, you know, have a perk of the job.
Yeah, there's always one.
Yeah.
And number two?
Number two. I'd have to say when you get a tiny plastic jewellery, because I think that's really... I like...
Yes.
Kind of really kitsch. And then I've had, like, tiny little plastic rings, which are really cute. And then you can use them as stitch markers, which is perfect. When you're doing your Christmas knitting, you're like, oh, God, what am I getting? Oh, wait, here's a tiny plastic ring.
Whee!
And they're usually just kind of really kiddie, like, really cute ones. So that's kind of fun.
Hey, wait, somebody should do a range of knitting Christmas crackers.
Hey, that's
we'll get
gap.
Back to you on that.
All right. Patent pending. Yeah. but I have to say, number one, I think this is a really telling of the really idiosyncratic nature of crackers. It's quite an English thing, I bet. I don't know if this is like a general worldwide thing that people get this, but mini screwdriver sets. Have you ever won one of those?
Yes. Best day ever.
I think they're great. And then there's always a point in my life, maybe it's just me because I'm very practical about things and I like fixing things, but I was like, oh, I need some mini screwdrivers. And I'm like, I'll find my mini screwdriver set from Christmas circa 19 whatever. and then I, like, unscrew it with a tiny set. And you should get it in a really cool, like, key ring thing. So yeah, mini screwdrivers.
And they're just so much more useful than anything else that comes in a cracker.
Yeah.
So sometimes you get, like, nail clippers, but they never work.
True, that's also a very classic thing.
Yeah, it's so weird. Of all the things that would be really fun to win on Christmas Day, nail clippers.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any... Well, depends what kind of person you are, but very few times you get that excited about a mini screwdriver set. Like, hey, it's your birthday! Tiny screwdriver.
Yeah, it's true.
You've got to fix all the tiny things in your life.
Sunglasses, they have tiny screws.
Exactly, that's what I'm talking about. And battery packs on fairy lights, yep. Which of course featuring heavily in my life at the minute now.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that would be a highlight for me.
Very good, very sensible, I like it.
What about you?
So at number three, I have tiny dice.
Yes, you always win them, don't you?
Because tiny dice, sometimes they come in a sort of little... sort of bag, like you get oranges in, like a sort of net bag.
Yes.
And that feels festive. But no, I find that there's something fun about tiny dice. There's nothing you can do with them, really. You can keep them, and then maybe if you've lost dice for a board game, say you're playing...
Yahtzee.
Yeah, exactly. So there's, you know, they're just like around. There's something nice about dice.
There's some sort of thing that, like, the manufacturers are like, well, it's Christmas Day, they've spent a long time indoors, maybe they're going to start gambling, let's give us some dice, you know?
Yeah, and I don't know why, but I just really I find it so satisfying that the opposite sides of the dice add up to six.
Well, yeah, that's
seven, sorry,
there you go.
Up to seven. Oh, God.
Anyway, you're going to be entertained for the whole of Christmas Day with
just
that.
Just checking the dice. Do they add up to seven? Oh, my God, they do. So fun. And number two, I don't know why I didn't put this at number one. I'm going to keep it at number two because it's kind of silly. I love those little plastic fish that's supposed to tell your fortune.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, they're so great.
The ones that are, like, just really thin, papery, plasticky.
Yeah.
And the way they curl, that's going to determine your future.
Yes. And it's got, like, a sort of little, code, you know, so if it curls up completely, then, you know, you will be wealthy. And if it lays completely flat, then you will be unlucky in love or whatever.
Well, I have a problem with them because sometimes when they've been in the cylindrical shape of the cracker, they're sort of biased towards curling up anyway because they've kind of been sat
Sophie,
in there.
It's all to do with the heat. Maybe you just have cold hands, so your hands don't affect the fish in the way that they should.
No, it's definitely the curvature of a
No.
But no, they're good fun. Yeah, definitely.
They're super fun. I actually love to keep... I have quite a few of them now.
You don't talk to people anymore.
I'm quite a superstitious person.
You just don't talk to any people anymore. My fish will tell me all I need to know. Exactly. Give me your hand.
I'm going to start getting a booth at fairs to tell people's fortunes.
Definitely.
And at number one, I actually was going to have tiny screwdrivers.
Yes. There we go.
But I don't want to have the same thing as you.
Sure, okay.
So I'm going to change it to tiny pack of cards.
Yes.
Because tiny pack of cards. Oh my, I mean, they're impossible to use. Just like... You can't play Snap with them, too small, they go everywhere, they don't pile up properly.
Dealing them out with tweezers.
Yeah, exactly.
One for you.
But I sort of like to imagine that all the tiny things at night, you know, the tiny elves use them.
There we go, it's actually for Christmas elves.
Exactly, so the crackers. Ah, it's all a ruse, I see. So the elves, they're bored of giving presents to other people all the time, making the presents for Santa to give to people. They thought, you know what? We want presents for us. And they knew that the humans... would just discard these tiny products, except for the screwdrivers.
Mm-hmm, of course.
And they just collect them.
Yep. Cool. Well, I'm actually looking forward to Christmas crackers this year and see what we get.
Yeah.
And then we can compare.
Mm-hmm. I hope I get the screwdrivers.
Fingers crossed, I know.
So excited. Well, that was a cracker of a top three.
Hey.
So that pretty much wraps up this festive edition of the podcast.
Got a little bow on top as well.
Little gift tag.
Oh, it's lovely. Waiting and ready for you guys on Christmas Day.
Oh, and we hope you've enjoyed everything today. And thanks again to Megan, who we spoke to earlier, our surprise guest. She was awesome as always.
And Blacker Yarns, our lovely sponsor.
Yes, thank you to them as well. And thanks to all you guys for listening. You can always email us, podcast@pompommag.com.
And keep in touch on our pom-pom group on Ravelry.
Yes, please do. And now for your enjoyment at this festive season, to bring some cheer to your hearts, we're going to play you out with the 12 days of...
Nitmus.
Nitmus.
Enjoy and Merry Christmas, everyone.
On the first day of Nitmus, my true love sent to me a fluffy Angora bunny. On the second day of Nitmus, my true love sent to me two needles clicking and a fluffy Angora bunny. On the third day of Nitmus, my true love sent to me three skeins of sock yarn, two needles clicking and a fluffy Angora bunny. On the fourth day of Nitmus, my true love gave to me four projects blocking, three skeins of sock yarn, two needles clicking, and a fluffy Angora bunny. On the fifth day of Nitmus, my true love gave to me five DBS. Four projects blocking, three skeins of sock yarn, two needles clicking, and a fluffy Angora bunny. On the sixth day of Nitmus, my true love gave to me six skeins of winding, five DPS. Four projects blocking, three skeins of sock yarn, two needles clicking, and a fluffy Angora bunny. On the seventh day of Nitmus, my true love gave to me seven spinners filling, six skeins of winding, five DPS. Four projects blocking, three skeins of sock yarn, two needles clicking, and a fluffy Angora bunny. On the eighth day of Nitmus, my true love said to me eight sheep are grazing, seven spinners spinning, six skeins are winding, five DPS. Four projects blocking, three skeins of sock yarn, two needles clicking, and a fluffy Angora bunny. On the ninth day of Nitmus, my true love gave to me nine whips are waiting, eight sheeps are grazing, seven spinners spinning, six skeins are winding, five DPS. Four projects blocking, three skeins of sock yarn, two needles clicking, and a fluffy Angora bunny. On the tenth day of Nitmus, my true love gave to me ten alpacas sleeping, nine whips are waiting, eight sheep are grazing, seven spinners spinning, six skeins are winding, five DPS. Four projects working, three skeins of sock yarn, two needles clicking, and a fluffy angora bunny. On the 11th day of knitmas, my true love gave to me 11 pom-pom makers, 10 alpacas leaping, 9 whips awaiting, 8 sheep for grazing, 7 spinners spinning, 6 skeins of winding, 5 DPNs. Four projects blocking, 3 skeins of sock yarn, 2 needles clicking, and a fluffy angora bunny. On the 12th day of knitmas, my true love gave to me 12 cashmere goats, 11 pom-pom makers, 10 alpacas leaping, 9 whips awaiting, 8 sheep are grazing, 7 spinners spinning, 6 skeins are winding, 5 DPNs. 4 projects blocking, 3 skeins of sock yarn, 2 needles clicking, and a fluffy angora bunny.
Merry Christmas, everyone!
Merry Christmas. And thanks, Eli.
Jesus, that was really hard.